When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Chicago, it's DJ Moore here. I'm glad to be here, excited to be here.
DJ Moore, Chicago Bear wide receiver.
Shoot, they're getting a fun, exciting, energetic person that's just going to come to work every day and not look back.
Out to Moore, blockers at the five. Moore in for a Chicago touchdown.
Williams with pressure, throws. It is caught by DJ Moore. 2 points on the board.
DJ Moore chatting it up with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
We're going to bear down.
Say go, DJ.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to DJ Moore, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Good morning, DJ. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Well, I got to tell you, man, I mean, it was fun to see you scoring. It was fun to see you score a touchdown. It was fun to see the two-point conversion. It just felt like something special was happening at the end of the game. I know it didn't work out in the end, but I got to tell you, 11 points in 22 seconds, I'm not sure I've seen that very often. What was that like being on the field as you suddenly got it all together and started scoring?
It was amazing. It was like we were always clicking on one accord. And, I mean, we were just going out there just playing ball and doing our best to get back in the game.
What changed? What do you think was the difference? How were you able to come back? Because, let's face it, I'm sure that you noticed thousands of fans left the building. There was a feeling of inevitability that this was not going to go well in the last minute and a half or a couple minutes, and yet you guys found a way to make it happen and force overtime. What changed?
I think we knew we just had to make some chunk plays and then go on a run, unbelievable run, to make it tied up and send this thing to overtime.
I got to tell you, it was great to see you getting the ball, and I mean, you know, not just with the touchdown and the 2-point conversion, but that catch in the middle of the field set up the 48-yard field goal. I mean, it was like, you know, it's 2 weeks running now. You get 7 targets and you make 7 catches.
Yeah, that catch was kind of like last year's catch when we won on a field goal, but this year was to tie it up to send it to overtime. But yeah, 7 for 7, that means I'm doing something right, catching the ball and making some plays.
Let's talk about the 27-yarder that set up the game tying field goal. It seemed like desperation mode. What was that? What was that like? What was it said in the huddle beforehand, and how did you get open?
We ran that play in practice a few times. Most of the time, the ball didn't get to me in practice, but in that instance, you just got to be ready. When your number gets called, and Caleb threw a dart over the two defenders, and I had caught it, and it was like a down situation. So I had to catch it, get down, and then set up the field goal.
So, you know, I saw you say some nice things in the post game about Caleb Williams and the fact that that his confidence seems sky high. What is your takeaway over the last 2 weeks? You know, it felt like he was doing okay. He was having a good start to the season, and then during the 3-week stretch before the coordinator was fired, it seemed like he had taken a step back. And now his numbers are fantastic. He's completing like 10% more passes over the last 2 weeks. Do you notice a difference in him and in his confidence level?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he's been playing with a lot of confidence, getting the ball out fast, and just taking what the defense gives him, and not really have to be Superman until it's really necessary.
How confusing was that defense to face? How aggressive were they coming after Caleb with the blitz, and how many adjustments did you have to make throughout the course of the game?
We didn't really have to make adjustments. We was ready for them. Whatever they sent, we had answers for. Sometimes it was tricky to see, but we just let the plays ride.
You know, I heard Jalen Johnson say last week that it's just been the most unlucky stretch of games. And you said something along those lines about the luck has got to turn in your favor at some point. What does it feel like? I mean, it's now as close as that was, as crazy as 11 points in 22 seconds were, you end up losing your fifth straight game. You know, you go back thinking about coming back from London, heading to the bye week, and that's the last win you've had. It just feels like, you know, months ago.
Yeah, it definitely feels like months ago. And we've been losing, like, on some crazy things. So we had the Hail Mary, then we had the blocked field goal. Yep. I mean, you can't even make it up. Like, some teams get that once a year, and we just getting them back to back to back. So it's just like, all right, our luck really got to turn at some point.
Got to ask you about one of the more confusing plays of the game, and it certainly was costly. Fourth and four, it appeared at one point the Bears were going to kick a field goal. On comes the field goal unit. Then no. They turn around and they go back on the field. It reduced the amount of time you had in the huddle. It turned out that Caleb revealed after the game, DJ, that he called maybe the wrong play because he didn't hear Thomas Brown correctly. How would you describe that sequence and what exactly happened?
I just seen the specialist running on. I didn't really know what was happening at that moment, but we was all telling them to get off, and then we just got a play and we had to go run it. I don't know if it was the right or wrong play, but, I mean, we still got to go execute that play.
Yeah, it was a rough one. I think Caleb said that he didn't hear what the play was because it was so late in the
seemed chaotic.
Yeah, it just seemed like that. You know, the decision as to whether you were going to kick or go for it needed to come in earlier, and it was not on time.
Yeah, I just seen them running on, but the offense was still on the field. I was just like, what are we supposed to do? Get on? Get off or just stay on?
DJ, it's a broad question. This might be hard to answer, but how does a team learn how to win?
By not beating ourselves. I don't know if we had a lot of penalties, but if we did, I would say that, and then we got to score faster and often so we can take leads and stay up with the defense that we have.
I think that was the first game this year that you've scored first. I mean, it's been crazy. And finally, you know, you kind of got out and you did get the first score of the game. But, you know, it took some gymnastics to even get there because there were obviously issues. You guys had 7 penalties for 80 yards. Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, to see that 80 yards could have been useful for us to win. So having penalties is a pain in the butt, but, you know, we got to overcome those, and when we can, it'll help us win.
This segment with DJ Moore is sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency, call the plumbing professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. All right, so the last time you threw a pass, you were with the Panthers. How would you describe your experience throwing a pass into the end zone yesterday, and where did that come from?
I mean, it was fun to do. I thought I was going to be able to get room, either a catch or a PI, which I think it should have been DPI, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, it came about off of the screenplay that we had earlier in the game where I caught the ball out the backfield, and then it was just a setup, something else.
Yeah, that was, I mean, you were an old quarterback. You told us one time that you were, as a kid, you had played some quarterback, and it's one of the reasons that you don't like complaining about getting the ball, because that was awful when your friends were always telling you, give me the ball, give me the ball. When was the last time you played quarterback in a competitive setting?
In a competitive setting?
High school?
Probably, what, I'm 27?
Yeah.
Probably high school.
You're only 27? Oh,
he's
my
a
gosh.
Young man. Yeah. That's right.
That's crazy.
He's just entering his prime.
So, DJ, over the last couple of weeks, obviously with Thomas Brown taking over as offensive coordinator, I'm curious, have you noticed, does Matt Eberflus as a head coach pay more attention to the offense since Shane Waldron has left? Does he sit in on meetings? How does he divvy up those responsibilities? Because he's also the defensive coordinator, or at least he's a defensive play caller. Just curious, throughout the course of a week in terms of preparation, how often does the offense see Matt Eberflus in the meeting room?
He's in there pretty much every day. He was when Shane was here, and he's just continued that with Thomas. He sits in the back of the room, make sure that everything going on the right way and how the play call sheet is going to be run. And he'd just be in the back of the room just taking notes and watching this work.
There were so many remarkable things that happened when you guys ended up coming back there at the end. Not the least of which was the first onside kick that actually was successful with these new rules where you have to declare it and then the ball bounces off one of their players. I don't even know if it went 10 yards, but it bounced off one of their guys and you guys get the fumble recovery. What was that like? I mean, did that, and by the way, you won the coin flip into overtime too, which is pretty extraordinary. What is it like when you see the first onside kick that has worked this year in the NFL?
I mean, it was amazing because we needed it at that moment. It hit off the dude's leg, and I think Moore recovered the ball. So I was like, hey, let's go out here and try to put some points up and take this thing in overtime. And the one, the coin flip in overtime was amazing. I thought we were just going to walk down the field and go score.
Yeah.
Because it was hot. So it was like, all right, we got the upper hand right now. We hot. They really not doing nothing to stop us, so we might as well just go down and score.
Did they change their defensive approach in overtime? Because it seemed as if on the sack that Caleb took, he held the ball for a very long time. It was a 12-yard loss, and it looked like them dropping into coverage, as many people as they dropped, was a change in they're used to coming after the quarterback and maybe with the different types of pressures. Was that a different approach for the Vikings? And because that was a key play in the game.
Yeah, I felt like they all just dropped back in the coverage. And I mean, it was tough because I forgot how many eligibles we had going downfield. So it was tough to get open because everybody was in like a zone. So I was like, oh man.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm kind of happy that you're playing on Thursday. I don't know if you are, and that's a quick turnaround, but you're in Detroit. You know they're having a hell of a year, and they've been good at home, but you've got them Thursday in Detroit. It's obviously Thanksgiving. What are your thoughts? You know going in how quick it's going to be, but there won't be a lot of time for post-mortem for regret because you got to start preparing the minute you get in the building today.
Yeah, going to Detroit. It should be a good game. I know we're going to give our all, and hopefully we get this win and have some turkey leg.
You know, DJ, I wanted to ask you about from the player's perspective. Fourth quarter, you guys start to make a little bit of a comeback. It's 24-10. You score a touchdown. The decision to go for two can be defended by guys who, you know, study analytics for a living, and certainly that you can defend it. From a player's perspective, were you surprised? Did you think it was the right decision? What's your thought process coming out of it? You did not make it, and obviously you made that sort of a moot point later by getting the two-point conversion, but in that moment, at that time, it seemed like there was a loss of momentum after you guys did not convert the two-point play.
Yeah, going into it, I think we knew we was going to do the two-point play. both times. So it was just the fact of executing, and the first one we didn't. So that gave us a little lull, and then we came back out, scored, and then we actually got the 2-point play, which was the momentum that we needed to take it into overtime.
You know, I look at where you're at, and you've had some good moments, but as you say, you've had these heartbreaking losses. You've lost on the last play of the game now three times during this five-game losing streak. Do you feel like you're snake bit a little bit? Do you feel like, no, this is the one, we're going to win this one? How does it go down?
I think we're supposed to win every game, and until we get out there and the clock says 0-0, or whatever the score says at the end, it's either a win or a loss. And we've been on the wrong side with the L's lately. So, I mean, we're going to be due for a win. Whenever it comes, it's going to be amazing, and I just can't wait for it.
How hard is it to block out the noise? How hard is it to kind of get past the negativity? Because this is as you saw, fans are leaving early because there's not an expectation that the Bears are capable of the kind of comeback you guys did provide. And I just wondered, as you get through the weeks and the losses start to pile up, how difficult it can be to block all the outside stuff out.
It's not too hard. You just can't be on social media and be looking for what people are saying. So, I mean, that's one way to not be focused on the noise. And then also just knowing that you got another game to get ready for. The one that we just played is in the past. You can't change nothing about the outcome, but you can change the future outcome of the game that we're about to play.
Will you get a nice weekend off after this game? I mean, it seems like, you know, you lose your day off tomorrow, but, you know, you'll have an actual weekend to yourself. You guys could do something with the family.
We're going to have a nice weekend. My daughter's birthday is on Wednesday. So that's going to be a nice week for her.
So whenever you do get to sit down for Thanksgiving dinner, what are your favorites? What are your can't misses year to year?
To everything, really. I'm a one plate at a time type of guy. Can't have a lot of things touching at once.
Keep everything separate.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to go about it. So, DJ, Eberflus gave the schedule. You guys are going to be working on first and second down, I think, today, and then you're going to be expanding as the week goes on. Do you generally like or dislike kind of Thursday games? It makes for such a short week, but it almost gives you a little kind of mini bye in a way with the longer weekend. Do you, generally speaking, like Thursdays, or would you rather play noon on Sundays?
I like Thursdays because the whole week leading up to the game is like recovery and getting the body right and mentally getting ready for the game. You got to be a pro's pro during weeks like this, and then you got the mini bye after the game that'll really get your body right.
You had 7 touches, and certainly you carried the ball as well. How does your body feel this morning?
Sore. I was out there trying not to take hits, but I got hit a few times, and body's a little sore today.
That's not unusual. It seems like you've been getting hit pretty hard all year.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with this year. I just been getting hit for real, like harder than the last couple of years.
Is that the best defense you've played this year?
I can't say that right now. We still got Detroit to play and some other teams. So, but right now, that was probably like the trickiest defense by what they do.
Great stuff, DJ. Thank you, buddy. You're always a pro's pro when it comes to coming on with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, DJ. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
And happy birthday to your daughter.
Yeah.
It's great.
Thank you. I'll tell her when she wakes up.
Yeah, don't wake her up on my account. But that's great. That's fun stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, good for you.
He's got the right attitude. You can really do nothing but just keep going to work, keep producing, and keep your head down, because it's a very difficult time right now if you're a Chicago Bear in Chicago after 5 straight losses. Everybody wants your coach fired, and nobody believes in your team.
And, I mean, the crowd that did stick around, you know, you talked about people leaving. The crowd that was sticking around was chanting fire Flus. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, a lot of people will stay around just for that reason.
What time did you leave?
I never went there, buddy. You know me. I'm too busy doing the post game. I someone has to talk to Olin and Patrick after the game. Oh, they're not too pleased with this extensive losing the Bears have done. Pat picked the Bears to win the game. He felt they were going to be a part of the. And when they made the comeback, I was like, wow, because you know, I was trying to pick the Bears.
Right, yeah, you were trying to,
and I couldn't do it.
Mark Grody did too.
Yeah, Grody picked.
Not to bring up that, but you know, I think the point is a lot of people saw a path to victory.
Yes,
and there was one.
Yeah, there was one,
and then they got in their own way.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Big Z is next on The Score.
Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Big Z.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long-time contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire. Check him out, Aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, curiouser and curiouser, you know, the Bears, they keep finding new and extraordinary ways to lose games. 5-game losing streak. They came charging back, 11 points in 22 seconds. They got an actual onside kick to do that, which is incredible. That's the first one, the only one of this football season with the new rules. And then you get into overtime, you actually win a coin flip. So, I mean, how many things can go your way and then all of a sudden they don't go your way anymore. And that's the end of that.
Yeah. I mean, for all the defensive problems that they had in the game and there's a lot we could dive into, they got the stop on, I think it was 3rd and 1 to force Minnesota to kick a field goal there, before the late rally. If the Vikings are able to get a first down, they're taking more time off the clock. They're maybe getting in the end zone, and then it's absolutely game over. But they got a series of events. They had to have the stop, the kickoff return by DeAndre Carter that flipped the field, a 55-yard return, the quick touchdown, the onside kick, big pass over the middle to DJ Moore, and then the 48-yard field goal to get overtime, and then you win the coin toss. Yeah, they were catching every break. They were making their own breaks at that point, and then it fell apart, and they lose the ball game, and now they're 4-7. And guys, the crazy thing here is they are closer to having the number one pick in the draft than they are third place in the NFC North. I think we all know they're not going to wind up with the number one pick for the third consecutive year, but it would take a miracle of sorts for them to not finish in last place in the division for the third consecutive year.
Right now, yeah, the Bears are picking 12th, according to Tankathon.com. Brad,
they lose. They're going to lose pretty much every tiebreaker there is based on strength of schedule.
So in 10 thoughts in ChicagoTribune.com this morning, you started out with this. Talented rosters with good coaching find ways to consistently win close games. Bad rosters that are poorly coached do the opposite. Do the Bears have a bad roster?
I don't know that they have a bad roster. You know, I talked to a pro scout who, you know, main reason I called the guy was to kind of go over the Vikings, right, and what they've got going on. And what was supposed to be, by all accounts, I think even in Minnesota, a transition year for that organization, right? A step back, you know, you take a small step back to then move forward. And all they've done is go out and win this year. Like, it's unbelievable what Kevin O'Connell's been able to do. And the scouts are talking about, you know, how O'Connell doesn't have the world's best ingredients. He didn't say it quite that way, but that he's finding ways to put delicious meals on the plate. And he said, you look at the Bears, and they've got the ingredients there to have significantly more success than they're currently experiencing at 4-7. So are there issues with the roster? Yeah, I mean, we could talk from now until the new year about the issues on the roster and where improvements need to be made. Like, that's not cutting edge radio, probably, but they're good enough to certainly be better than they're at 4-7. You've got to be feeling good about the way the quarterback performed yesterday. I think he's gone 193 consecutive pass attempts without an interception now. They're getting the playmakers involved. But as a team, they simply can't put together a complete game here against a couple divisional opponents. They're right there with the Vikings, a 9-2 team. The week before, they're right there with Green Bay in a 1-point loss. But when you look at the standings, they're not even close. They're 4 back of the Packers, 5 back of the Vikings, and in a world of trouble.
So what is your take on the way that Caleb Williams played? There were obviously a lot of plays that he made, and it just wasn't enough. But he does seem to be improving over the last 2 weeks. I don't know what that means.
I thought he was really good yesterday. You know, that was a game that I think warranted some level of concern what it was going to look like because of the Vikings defense and how aggressive Brian Flores is with pressure, with disguising pressures, with sending just all sorts of stuff at quarterbacks that they're not accustomed to seeing. The way that Caleb was able to handle that and manage the offense, I thought was impressive. He didn't look overwhelmed. He didn't look confused. Should he have gotten rid of the darn ball on the second down in overtime? Absolutely. But to perform as he did, to move the offense, to make some big time plays, not only from the pocket, but extending plays like he did there in the first quarter. The throw to Keenan Allen was just an absolute dime, and then the ability to drop that ball into DeAndre Swift's hands was fantastic. So I think you're seeing that growth, and to do it that way against the Vikings, that'll be a greater challenge when they have to play at Minnesota with the crowd noise in a Monday night game. But I thought he handled himself pretty darn well yesterday.
The Vikings get 452 total yards, 6 of 13 on third down. On the key drive of the game in overtime, they overcome 2nd and 17, 1st and 15, 1st and 20. I thought the Bears defense was elite. I thought the Bears defense was a top 10 unit. What happened? What has happened to the Bear defense, and how much of that is on maybe Matt Eberflus doing too much or Matt Eberflus not pushing the right buttons? It's all on Matt Eberflus, isn't it, or is it?
Well, I mean, it's on Eberflus and it's on the players, right? Like, you know, it's not on Matt Eberflus that Jalen Johnson has uncharacteristically has 2 pass interference penalties. But if you would have told us on Friday that they're going to go out and hold Justin Jefferson to 2 catches for 27 yards, I think you'd say, man, the Bears are in for a great day on defense against Sam Darnold and the Vikings, because they did just that against arguably the league's best wide receiver. Unfortunately, they had no answer for Jordan Addison. They really struggled in the second half of that game against T.J. Hockenson, who had too many big plays. They got gashed with that one long run by Aaron Jones, who went over 100 yards for the third time in his last 5 games against the Bears. And so, no, it wasn't good enough. You know, the pass rush was better than it's been. They had seven different defenders combined for nine quarterback hits on Sam Darnold. But there were four or five instances of the Vikings converting like third and eight plus. And those are downs when you're talking about having a top 10 defense that you're getting off the field. You are bringing the punt return unit on the field after that snap. And it was just too easy for Minnesota to keep some of those drives alive.
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com. You know, we just talked to DJ Moore, and he said that that Matt Eberflus is in the room, is in the offensive meetings. He kind of sits in the back and takes it all in. Eberflus vowed after the game that he was going to be sitting in with special teams this week. Is it time for him to give up the defensive play calling? And if he's doing all this stuff, are you concerned? You know, we had a talk about with Pete Bursich before the game about how Kevin O'Connell goes about giving away some of his responsibilities to others because he's their play caller as well as their head coach.
Yeah, at this point, I think it's just grasping at straws for Eberflus, right? Mm-hmm. With where they're at, with the things that are really piling up against them, the current losing streak, the issues that they've had with the offensive coaching staff, the inability to close out games in the fourth quarter. You know, there's just a lot that's working against them. If you told me Eberflus is going to let Eric Washington call the defensive plays on Thursday at Detroit, that doesn't convince me that they're necessarily going to be better on special teams, right? That Eberflus is going to by himself have everything tightened up in that room. I mean, Richard Hightower knows what mistakes have been made. DeAndre Carter's a veteran returner who makes good decisions, right? Who is sure-handed with the with the football, and he had an uncharacteristic miscue when he wasn't able to get away from a ball that's bouncing, and every once in a while, that's going to happen. It's just the Bears had, they had a whole handful of them, and you add it all up, and they had too many big miscues. You take one of them away, and they're able to win that football game, but we can't go back and change that.
This segment with Brad Biggs, sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency, call the plumbing professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. All right, Brad, we only have 30 seconds, so it has to be a quick answer. How surprised would you be if the Bears fired Matt Eberflus on Friday after losing big to the Lions?
I mean, anything could happen, right? Like, anything could happen. They make that move, and I'm not convinced it's going to help them this year. Certainly not going to give them some magical head start in a coaching search. It's not, the New York Jets aren't ahead of the world in their coaching search for 2025 because Robert Saleh is collecting a check to be an advisor with his buddy Matt LaFleur in Green Bay right now, right? It appears they're going to have a new coach next year. It's going to be a topic every single week until they do have a new coach. But you do that. Is that going to make them better against the Lions when they have to turn around and face them 2 weeks later? Is it going to make them better when they have to get on a plane and travel out to San Francisco? It's maybe going to make them a little bit different. It's going to surely put more stress on the locker room that's already got a lot of stress on it. But it's all a fair question when you're riding a 5-game losing streak and you're headed to play a division rival that's a 10.5-point favorite and has been not just beating some opponents this year, beating them up.
Thank you, Big Z. We appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
That is Brad Biggs. He's the football man of the Chicago Tribune. When we come back, I want to talk about DeAndre Carter for a second. Just one of the great rule violations that you have on special teams, and it blew up on the Bears. Mully and Haw on the score.
This segment with Brad Biggs, sponsored by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868.
Able to explain what did happen on the missed punt, like technically with you?
Yeah, I was trying to call Peter, just didn't get out the way of the ball. Ball took a bounce and hit me.
When you go back to the sideline, then are you just kind of praying and hoping that they don't do anything with it, that Minnesota doesn't do anything with it to take advantage of it?
I mean, yeah, obviously you're hoping that we get the ball back or get a stop or something. But that's on me. I put the defense in a bad situation. They get the ball on the 10-yard line. You can't expect them to hold up, you know. So, again, that's on me.
That is the voice of DeAndre Carter, and that's Bill DeVoe.
Bill right? DeVoe.
With poison.
Poison.
Poison is what you yell when the punt is going to...
A girl's poison.
Is going to land without catching it.
He said, Peter, some people say poison. Yeah. You say it's a term that says, get away!
Yes.
Get away from the ball.
But
don't let it hit you in the shin.
So here's the rule on punt return,
okay,
in case anyone doesn't know it. If you are not catching the ball in the air,
yeah,
you are required to be 7 yards away from it. Seven yards is the minimum. The idea is if you're not going to be able to catch it and keep it from hitting the ground, you've got to understand that the ball is oblong and it will hit in funny ways.
Well, it's a rule
and
of thumb.
Bounce in
it's,
funny
it's not
ways.
A rule. You're not required.
Well, I'm saying it's like the
it's a coaching point.
The coaching point.
It's a coaching
would be,
point.
Don't be within seven yes. yards of it once it bounces because it will find you.
It's been that way.
He was
forever.
About 2 yards away,
and
he came running up. He's run up a couple times on catching punts. And you would rather a guy be stationary.
He runs up and then he's doing the, you know, safe thing and with his hands and you
and
do,
he's yelling,
get away, poison, poison, poison.
Peter,
poison. Peter,
yes.
Peter, Peter.
Peter, poison.
Didn't work. That was a bad mistake.
That's a big mistake.
That's a bad mistake.
Because when you're that close to the ball and it hits the ground, it can bounce
and
hit you.
That's going to fall on the coach. Eberflus, Hightower, whoever. But that's a player.
That's a Hightower thing.
That's a player thing.
Yeah. That,
Money, that's a player thing. He's a veteran.
You can't have a field goal blocked. You can't flub and lose a turnover on a punt. There were some problems.
Fair
mistakes
enough. I'm not defending special teams.
You are sitting here defending special teams.
I am explaining why in that moment – everybody's reaction was the same, from the press box to the 400 level to watching at home, wherever. What is he doing?
Why are you that close to the ball?
What are you thinking, DeAndre Carter? You're a veteran. You should know better. Yeah. You're not
a
rookie.
He's been pretty good, but that was a terrible mistake.
Then he atoned for that.
Did he atone for it? He did have a nice long return.
Lucy said that.
Yeah, well.
See, now that's where I have a problem with the coaching.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. No. Don't suggest that.
That's
you don't
funny.
Erase one mistake with another great play unless you win. When you win, fine. Then you can fudge at whatever you want to fudge. But don't do that when you lose. You've got to hold somebody more accountable for that kind of mistake. You cannot tolerate that.
I gotcha. He's not Velus Jones. But that doesn't mean it's
did
not
that feel good?
To blame.
Did that feel good?
You're just now saying
it's,
Velus Jones?
It's been weeks since you have thrown shade at him.
Velus Jones would run up and not catch the ball. That's different than a ball bouncing and hitting you. It's still bad.
Did that feel better?
It's cathartic. I don't think I brutalized Velus on purpose. I just meant that they had
you did
to
not maybe
him.
Do it on purpose, but you did do it often.
I have no confidence in Ryan Poles.
Why?
Velus Jones.
That was your favorite call of the year.
That is so unfair. I am not here taking gratuitous shots at Velus Jones. I'm just saying that DeAndre Carter, for his faults, is not Velus Jones.
312-644-6767. Your reaction to the 9 o'clock hour.
Oh, my God. Now I feel like I took a gratuitous shot, and I was making a good point about
you
the
You are absolved, my
rule.
Son. You are forgiven.
No, now I've got my Catholic guilt and overload. Why do I continually damage others? Mully and Haw. 312-644-6767 is the score.